It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago. First, the Urban Ag Federal Advisory Committee report is out. Brian Goosey explains.
Not too long ago, the committee provided its first report to the secretary with 14 recommendations. These recommendations touched upon many agencies of USDA, including topics related to developing a public database to provide easier access to the variety of grant and funding opportunities that exist across the department. They also are looking at some of the loan programs that the Farm Service Agency administers. They're looking at some of the food scrap composting and compostable food packaging standards that USDA has in place. And then they're also looking at how there could be better sharing of information across government agencies, with USDA taking the lead in coordinating with such agencies as EPA, Fish and Wildlife Service, Department of Veterans Affairs, and others.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. We'll have contact information for Bob coming up in just a few moments. Bob, there's so many places I could go talking about the latest World Ag Supply Demand Estimates or WASDE report, but I guess one of the first places to start is grains and oil seeds, whether we're talking wheat, corn, or soybeans. A little is something in there for everybody, right?
A little something for everybody. That's right. The markets are always made up of two types of traders, really. I guess three. Bulls, bears, and those who are neutral, sitting on the sidelines waiting for opportunities as they see fit. And regardless of that bigger data that came out from the USDA last week, I think a few weeks ago, we kind of set the table talking about expectations for the near term into this mid part of second quarter. And one thing that I tend to watch, is seasonality, especially in the grain markets, because I think they've got teeth, right? It's not like every year tendencies are going to work. There's no doubt that they don't always work. But for the most part, if you look at 30-year charts of corn, wheat, soybeans, soy meal, bean oils become more of a, in my opinion, more of an energy influenced market. So maybe not pure like it used to be back in the old days prior to the biodiesel. You know, these markets have tendencies. And as we were talking a few weeks ago, one of them is to put some kind of weather premium into the market around about this time of the year. So you've got crop going into the ground, and the seeds going into the ground, and even after they're in the ground, sometimes they have to be replanted because weather's not conducive, could be massive amounts of water, precipitation, things like that, could be too dry at the moment, things get delayed. So normally you would expect that common sense would say that if prices are at pretty low areas, which they had been back in the end of February or so, that you'd be looking to put in some kind of risk premium just in case. And that's kind of what has been happening over the last couple few weeks. Now, the market for the old crop July corn had been stuck in a range of about, say, 460 down to 440. So about a 20-cent range for about two solid months or so after it ticked down to the low back at the end of February. And of late, it actually looks like it's trying to push into a new higher zone. Now, is this a new rally that's going to continue and get back to where we came from, up in the 490s? Can't necessarily say. We're not too far from that, though, but it looks like it's got some legs. If you look at the wheat contracts, more explosive, right? I mean, this thing was for the July soft red winter wheat, the Chicago variety, was sitting at $5.50 a bushel. And today we're talking about $6.90 with the rally that we've seen. So a massive $1.40 per bushel increase in price that we've seen over the last three, 4 weeks. And then for soybeans, old crop July and new crop Nov also sustaining some gains. So it looks like that seasonality, in other words, had been in play. And this was happening before the report came out. So granted, maybe in certain areas there was a bit of adverse weather, not ideal, especially for the winter wheat crop, you know, whether or not they're getting rain, too much rain, how it's looking, too dry here, too wet there. And that's what happens. And we're starting to see that you know, particular seasonality be put into the marketplace. So this was all happening before the USDA report came out, and then the USDA report came out. So you kind of say, you kind of mentioned that a little bit there, kicking the conversation off a few minutes ago. And I'm not going to go through all the line items. The ones that stick out to me, there's about 25 line items between corn, wheat, and soybeans that are most important to me. I'm not going to go through each one of those because that'll be a data blur. But if you were to highlight the ones that came out, the estimates that came out from the USDA in bullish blue versus bearish red, most of the corn and wheat were blue. So a lot of the data that came out, in my opinion, were either steady to better in terms of the what the USDA is anticipating in terms of crop size, production, ending stocks, et cetera, here and elsewhere. So that's a good thing for corn and wheat. For soybeans, it was steady too on the bearish side of the equation. So we'll have to see if this rally that we've seen, it's a bit smaller rally, a bit more subdued than corn and wheat, especially relative to wheat. We'll have to see if this has legs or not. So we'll see how that plays out. And then it just goes down to the variability. And what I'm talking about with respect to variability is we get this data from the USDA, and it would be great if everybody else who's watching the same crops develop, same crops go in the ground, whatever the seasonality is, the time of year in terms of the, you know, crop production cycle, we're seeing the market at the same levels, meaning production, possible production, ending stocks, exports, things like that. But we've got some pretty large differentials. So to me, that tells me that there could be some good volatility over the near term until those numbers converge. And what I'm specifically talking about, for example, is estimates coming out of Brazil in terms of the total soybean crop size down there. You've got an ag consultant, Agronegocios, that put the crop at about 142.8 million metric tons. The USDA is still up at 154. So that's an 11 million metric ton differential. If you break that down into percentages, I mean, that's a little less than 10%, about 8% or something like that, which is huge, right? So we have to see how those numbers come together. CONAB, same crop, is at about 146.5. So again, a bit closer to the Agronegocios than the USDA. So we'll have to see which ones are correct at the end of the day. Safrina corn crop put at 86.1, and that's versus a USDA number of 115. That's the total corn crop of 115.8 versus 114 previously. So a bit higher in terms of the corn expectations there. If you look at what's going down in Argentina, along the same thought process, is Buenos Aires Grain Exchange has exports at about 31.5 million metric tons of corn out of there in the new marketing year. USDA is up at 38 million metric tons, and that's substantial. It's a substantial difference. And in terms of the corn crop size, the USDA has it out of Argentina at 53 million metric tons, and that is versus the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange number of 47.5. So throwing a lot of numbers at you, but what I'm just trying to make the point of is that there's a big difference between what some more local estimators are seeing in terms of the production down in South America compared to what the USDA is standing firm on at the moment. And we'll just have to see how that plays out. If it does, at the end of the day, come closer to the estimates that are being published by the more local sources down there, shall we say, then I would think the prices have to go up, right? I would think that that would be another bullish element in the market. So we'll see how that all plays out. And that's what we're dealing with. I mean, so those are some of the bigger picture elements that the market's trying to grapple with. So there's going to be, you know, week-to-week pricing based on new estimates and how those numbers kind of come together over the next few weeks. This is just my opinion, of course. And then in terms of, you know, the crop here in the United States, we're going to go back to on a week-to-week basis, just kind of watching how things develop. And winter wheat conditions later today are expected to be about steady to maybe down about 1%. We'll see if that plays out in terms of the planting expectations for corn and soybeans. Well, soybeans are expected to be about 45%. I don't have the corn one right in front of me. So we'll just have to see how those numbers play out relative to the numbers that are published. Those expectations play out relative to the numbers that are published from the USDA a little bit later in terms of the planting progress. And then we do have another element this week that we'll get some more data from, and that's the fact that that Wheat Quality Council tour for the Kansas wheat crop is going to take place this week. And I think the final results are going to be released on Thursday. So we'll get a little more boots on the ground data, shall we say, in terms of the quality of the crop out there for the Kansas wheat crop. And they'll give us some more information. So kind of a long answer to a short cue up there. But, you know, I think that's just kind of the elements that we're playing with right now, which basically end of the day is going to translate into some volatility in terms of the pricing. And I think that this rally that we've seen over the last few weeks makes sense relative to the unknowns at the moment.
Okay, 2 minutes to talk livestock. Not enough time there, but what are you watching?
More of the same in terms of the data that we're looking at. I think that the two factors that are kind of competing with each other right now, at least from my takeaways in terms of the research I read, I'm chatting with those who are in the business out there, is that we've got the heavier weight cattle. They're keeping production numbers fairly strong. This is trying to be offset by the expectations for that, again, bringing up the seasonal demand that's supposed to happen. Slaughter was a push last week, so that wasn't necessarily helpful or harmful. The weights, though, like you mentioned, the average dress cattle weight was 848. That's up from 817 a year ago, and the five-year average is 818, so 30 pounds heavier on average than the five-year average. So, you know, you start pushing cattle through at decent slaughter rates, and you got the heavier weights, and that just adds the production to that point. Estimated beef production last week was 526.6 million pounds, up from 525.1 the previous week. So basically more meat out there is offsetting the seasonal demand that you might normally see this time of year. So we'll just have to see how things play out on the cash side. Keep an eye on those things.
Okay, keeping an eye. If we want to keep an eye on something we haven't even talked about, we can talk one-on-one, right?
Phone number is 312-987-2053, or you can reach out via email at bmaurer, that's B-M-A-U-R-E-R, at manducatrading.com, or check out our website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago.
Are you planning on fence or brushwork on your ranch this summer? West Texas Attachments has the skid steer attachments you need to make the job easier. Clear the way with their rock and brush grapple and drive posts quickly and accurately with the Montana Post Driver. They also have a tree and post puller that will handle trees up to 3 inches in diameter. West Texas Attachments also offers low-cost delivery to your area. Call Brad at 806-548-7167 or visit westtexasattachments.com to get the skid steer attachments to make your job easier.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago, online, myfuturesadvisor.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Announced Thursday, the 2024 World Food Prize laureates.
They are Dr. Jeffrey Houghton of United Kingdom and Canada and Dr. Kerry Fowler of the United States.
World Food Prize Foundation President Terry Branstad with the news. Both laureates are noted for their efforts in establishing a global seed bank to assure seed conservation and crop biodiversity. The announcement coincided with an anniversary.
For 20 years, the State Department has hosted the World Food Prize Laureate Ceremony to honor the exceptional scientists and advocates who have transformed global food systems.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Both recently announced laureates will officially receive their honor during the annual Norman Borlaug Dialogue and World Food Prize Laureate Ceremony in late October in Des Moines, Iowa. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.